Hey there, mamas, and welcome back to the new Mama Marriage Bliss Show. I am Aliza Saeed, the Mama Marriage Coach, and welcome back. I hope that I am finding each and every one of you in a peaceful, beautiful moment. And if not, then take a breath, take a few minutes, a few seconds, just to take a deep breath and remind yourself to do that a few times during the day. I'm working on that today. To just remember to take deep breaths, loosen out my shoulders, I'm doing it as I talk, and just really take a deep breath and let everything in and anchor down into the present moment. I want to tell you before we start our interview today of a little trick that I've learned for mornings. So lately we've been having really late nights because of all different happy events that have been happening at night, but then it's really hard for my kids to wake up in the morning and I need to get them out and they just don't want to wake up. And as my son said, it just feels so good to be in the bed and still stay sleeping. So it's been really hard to wake them up. And what I've found is that when I come to wake them up, I always start with music and I try waking them up, and they usually get a little annoyed by me trying to wake them up and they don't want to wake up. So what I've been doing lately is instead of me waking them up, I put on the music and then I come around. My baby's already awake with me and I just put her right next to them. And in that moment that they feel that she's right next to them, I see them slowly starting to smile and turning over to give her a hug, and they wake up so peacefully with so much love in their hearts. And it's something that it makes me so happy to see. If I would come and just wake them up, it's annoying because they don't want to wake up and they want to keep sleeping. But once I bring the baby for them to come and hug, all of a sudden they become full of this love and peacefulness and joy. And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, that sometimes when we're busy thinking about our own life, troubles, things that's going on that are uncomfortable for me, we get stuck in this, you know, uncomfortableness and in the complaints and in the, it's so annoying to wake up or so annoying to whatever is going on. But when we know how to go out of our own personal world and also look into someone else's world and learn how to learn from somebody else and from an encounter that can enrich my life so much, it can bring so much peace and joy and peacefulness to the world and just so much good stuff. So in today's episode, we get to talk to Lainey Liberty, who is an amazing woman who has done so much in her life. Lainey is a best-selling author, international speaker, teen mentor, world schooler, partnership parenting paradigm advocate, and mother. In 2012, Lainey co-founded Project World School and has lived in community with over 100 teens in over 20 international locations. Lainey founded Transformative Mentoring for Teens in 2020 in response to the growing need to support teens' mental health. Lainey is also a community leader and alternative education advocate, and often credited with spearheading the thriving world schooling movement. In today's episode, we talk about world schooling, partnering in parenting, and building a family culture, and so much more. So enjoy the episode. Hey, and welcome to the New Mama Marriage Bliss Show. I want to help you get out of the overwhelming distance and guide you to reconnect to yourself and to your husband. You know you want things to be different, but you're probably not sure how to make it happen. Well, mama, you're in the right place. Here we will dive into all the things you need to start loving your life and relationship and start living like soulmates and not roommates anymore. We will dive into motherhood, marriage, communication, holistic inspiration, and practical hacks and tips. Mama, I believe that transformation and deep connection await you. Hi, I'm Aliza Saeed, proud mama and grateful wife, and the Mama Marriage Coach. You too can turn your mess into magic. Come on, mama, and let's do it together. Hi, Lainey, and welcome to the podcast.
So excited to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So before we start and you actually tell us who you are and what you do, can you first tell us what your favorite place in the whole world is? Because you've been to many.
Okay, so we'll go in that order. My favorite place, and then who I am and what I do.
There you go.
So, oh my goodness. I mean, I have a lot of favorite places, and I know it's really hard to hone in on like that. I've traveled all around the world. I have many, many, many favorite places. I love all the places that I've been. I try and make the favorite place where I'm at, like in the moment. That makes life really so much better because I can see the beauty and everything. But I do have a few places that I love to go back to, like Cusco, Peru, like Athens, in Greece. And where I'm currently at right now, I'm living in Guanajuato, Mexico. And so I love being here. So,
I
yeah.
love that. I actually heard somebody say that about their kids. One of her children asked her, "Who's your favorite?" And she said, "Whoever is with me at that moment is my favorite." So,
All of them.
all of them, exactly. Awesome. So, tell us who you are and what you do.
So my name is Lainey Liberty, as you said, in the intro, and I am many things. I'm a mom. I'm a best-selling author. I'm an international speaker. I am a teen mentor. I'm also an alternative education advocate, and many have credited us as being one of the founders that spearheaded the thriving world schooling movement. So I've done lots of stuff. I also work in mental health. I'm formerly a branding expert and worked in advertising and marketing for almost 18 years. So huge span of things that I have done. But I think I'm going to just give you a brief little story, which will put everything into perspective. My son and I took off to travel about 13 years ago for what was supposed to be a one-year trip. And during that time, we transitioned and transformed and metamorphosized into many different things. And it was about 8 months into our journey. And by the way, the journey that was supposed to be 1 year is still happening. So it's been like over 13 years now, which is really cool. But I'll get back to that in a moment. But 8 months into our journey, we were sitting in this absolutely beautiful park in Antigua, Guatemala. And part of the processing that we started to do was kind of de-unlearning and de-schooling and really recognizing all these different things about ourselves, the inner worlds and the outer worlds. And we started to slow down and really, really, really become present in our lives. And as we're sitting in this beautiful park in Antigua, Guatemala, this elderly man came and sat down next to us, and he was from Guatemala but had worked for dozens and dozens of years in the United States and spoke beautiful English. And before we left on our travels, I had just ended my 18-year career in marketing and advertising. And, I was a creative director and owned my own agency for 8 of those years. And a lot of my identity was wrapped up in that. And as this man sat down, he said, "Hello, young lady, and how are you? And, I'm so happy to see you here. And so, what do you do?" And I looked at him and I said, "When?" And that was the moment that I knew that my identity was shifting, that I was no longer identifying with the things that I did. And I was suddenly at that point, oops, really aware that I was becoming present in my life and as a mom and all the different things that were really important to me. And that was when I knew that I transitioned. So, what do I do? I do a lot of things. Who am I? I am a really compassionate, loving mom. I love to give. I love to support one another. I love to explore the unknown. And I also love to question everything. So, that's who I am.
Thank you. Thank you. You're so right that when someone says, "What do you do?" and we right away go to profession, so wrong. Like it just shows, how distorted some things in our culture are. I like that. Thank you. We've been throwing around this word world schooling, which maybe to us means something, but can you explain what exactly is world schooling?
Sure. Do you want why it's a part of our life, or do you just want the
Both.
objective?
Both. You could tell
Okay.
us what it is and why you decided to do it.
I'm going to change the order just a
There
little
you go.
bit because it sort of comes from that. So I mentioned that we started to travel and we were going to take a 1 year trip. My son was 9 when we decided to leave California and just turning 10. And we were to leave on what was to be a 1 year trip. And I knew intuitively that since I was taking my son out of school, he didn't have to do homework. He didn't have to stay caught up. 1 year would be way more educational. 1 year of traveling and backpacking through Latin America would be way more educational than whatever fifth grade had to offer. So I was like, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're going to experience the world. Then we go back to California. You start sixth grade, and if there's something you need to catch up on, we can deal with it. But I doubt anything. You're going to miss anything important. So we started to do that. We started to travel, and 8 months into our travels, my son asked me, "Can we just keep doing this forever?" And of course, I said yes. I mean, there are many things that led up to that, and I didn't tell the story of our deals and partnership and all that stuff. But if you want, we can touch on that later. But I said yes. Yes, we could do this forever. Why not? Why not? We were both learning. We were enjoying each other. Our lives had shifted. I started to change internally. My internal worlds really slowed down, and I got more present with my son. His internal world started to change. Our relationship strengthened. We were learning. We were in joy. We were absolutely having an amazing time. I said, yes. So at that point, I had to say, okay, responsible adult, if we're doing this forever, I need to look into and figure out how the heck we're going to address education. And he's like, yeah, fair enough, fair enough. It never occurred to me that we could continue doing what we were doing because nobody ever said we could. But the more that I started to research, I recognized and discovered and understood that there is this thing called unschooling. And unschooling is a form of education that really allows the learner to lead. I prefer now the term self-directed education, but at the time I was first exposed to unschooling, and that meant learning outside of school. It also meant that it was partnership based, and my son were already engaged in an intentional partnership relationship. So that really manifested into a beautiful, way of addressing the educational portion, which I never knew was possible. The thing
Partnerships with who?
partnership with my son. And I'll
Oh,
talk
you
about
mean
that in a
partnership? I thought you meant like with the people around you in the culture. Oh, okay.
No, partnership with my son, and I'll talk more about that in a moment, but
Okay.
I'll stick to the education portion so that gets really
Okay,
clear.
okay.
So, and I am jumping around, and I'm totally aware that I am because I
No,
didn't
it's
tell
okay. There's just so many things that I would love to hear more about. So.
No problem. Okay, so that learning that there's unschooling, and the thing that was absolutely completely mind-blowing was that we were already doing it. And once we recognized that we were already doing it and we didn't know that there was a name for what we were doing, we also recognized that it was working. We also recognized that we were both learning together, and that I, as an adult at the time in my 40s, became a learner again too, and we were learning in partnership. There's all that stuff, and I was like, this is amazing. Let's keep doing more of that. And part of our journey was we started to blog, and actually my son and I started a podcast together about 13 years ago too, and it was
Wow.
really cool. It was really cool, and it's funny that we listened to some of them. And he's an adult now, he's 23, but at 10 he had this cute little high-pitched voice. It was really sweet. But anyway, so the fact that we were learning and talking about it and writing and podcasting and traveling and sharing all this amazing stuff, we were blogging and podcasting, and people started to read it and listen to us and write to us. And I was always sort of kind of defensive or a little triggered with the term unschooling, even though it really clearly described the philosophy of what we were doing, the term itself said we were not doing something. The unpart sort of triggered me. And the manner in which we were learning was very intentional. It was very active. So I wanted to call it world schooling because we were traveling and engaging in learning, and it was so powerful. And as people started to read our blog and listen to our podcast, people started to write in and ask questions. And the questions were like, well, you're doing it with just you and your son. How do I do it with my family of seven? I don't know. I'm doing this with me and my son. Or I'd get questions from a family saying, you know, we're three people and we're going to Asia. Where do you recommend that we go? I was like, didn't you read my blog? We're in South America. You know, I don't know. Hadn't been there at that time. So I worked on starting a community because I figured together we had a lot of knowledge because somebody did travel with a family of seven and somebody did go to Asia with their family of three, and we could share that information. So I started to build community around the term world schooling, and we were in essence traveling and learning. And through the growth of that community, I grew that community to over 40,000 families. And through that movement that we started together to define what world schooling is. And I'll give you the real quick definition, and I'll go into some of the sort of qualifiers. The first definition is, and the biggest and most important definition is, learning from the world around you. And that's it. So you can learn from the world around you and travel. You could stay in your hometown and invite international people to you. You can engage in international learning intentionally through film, art, music, and so forth. But the majority of the people that do identify as world schoolers do combine some sort of travel with it. But it's not absolutely necessary. And some world schoolers travel long term, some are vacationers, some just travel occasionally, and some, like I said, invite other international inspiration into their lives, their families' lives. So that's the travel aspect. The education learning aspect is learning from the world. So if we are, you know, talking about and really interested in China, well, part of the way that we're going to learn is eating the food, listening to the music, looking at the language, looking at the art, that sort of stuff. And most of the learning that you do in context is deeper and richer. And the second element to world schooling is learning multi-age and learning experientially. So there's the social learning aspect and the experiential learning aspect, which are an important component to world schooling. And then the last, as I started to talk about, was the educational. All of it is learning, but the educational component, some families decide to combine travel and homeschooling with a curriculum. Others decide to travel and combine or use the world and combine enrolling their kids into a school. Some, you know, decide to go to a traditional school and then part-time, you know, vacation and be intentional about that. There is no right way to world school. You can combine educational elements however it works for your family. You can travel in the manner which works for you and your family. But the only thing is the intentionality about learning from the world around us and really being aware of culture and worldviews and combining an experiential element to it and a social learning multi-age experience together. So that's it.
Wow. As I hear you talking, well, before I ask you another question, what's your podcast called that you did with your son?
I don't know if you can still find it. It was called Raising Miro on the Road of Life. That was it.
Okay. So if anyone wants to go and find that, they could go find that.
Maybe.
So as I hear you talking about world schooling, it sounds to me like a really powerful way to learn a whole different level of empathy, of compassion, of kindness to other people, of respect. And I think that just that intention is like so amazing to be
to be aware of wherever you are in the world, however you educate your children, as you said, like just to open up your eyes and learn from the world around you, whether it's, you know, different cultures or whether it's your neighbor who you think you seem the same, but really there's so much you could even learn just from them. So that's really powerful. I'm interested to hear what really strong message do you think that you got, or one, you know, something that was different from a different culture than what you were used to that really changed something inside of you?
Well, I think, first of all, the through travel, we really discovered that the outer worlds are a clear reflection of our inner worlds. And we were accountable for really using self-inquiry to find out what was going on in the inner worlds. When we were reacting to certain things, taking a look and taking accountability and responsibility for unpacking those filters that we're using to see the world. And one of the examples of really understanding clearly worldviews was illustrated in an experience we had in Ecuador. We were on the coast in Ecuador, and we did some volunteer work with the Pacific Whale Foundation, and we helped them. We did whale watching. We did some conservation on the beach. We did a bunch of scientific research with like pulling up and putting together the bone structure of a dolphin. And there was a lot that really went into the volunteer work that we did with the Pacific Whale Foundation. And it gave us this whole different perspective of the coast and the ocean and the ecology and the relationship between the sea life and humans and so forth. And that really changed our worldview. And then the next week, we happened to meet a big group of local families that invited us to the beach when the family fishermen came in from their catch, and they're on the coast and they are like chopping off the heads of fish and opening up the guts of these big like sharks and selling it, and really proud and showing how much they can provide for their families. And they came at looking at the ocean and this entire environment that we were in from a totally different perspective. Then we did some volunteer work with one of the local schools in this area, and we did a puppet show and all this stuff. And we really noticed that the children, a lot of them were very impoverished, and their big concern was really, you know, making sure that they had food, making sure that, you know, they were happy and there were shoes that they could wear on their feet. And they ran around and, you know, they played with all sorts of shells and rocks, and sometimes it was trash, and just creating like little games out of everything. But a lot of times there was not an awareness around like keeping the beach clean. And that was a worldview and a perspective and a lens that we were looking through. They were looking at trash was found here, they pick it up, they play with it, you know, whatever it was. Maybe it was straws, and maybe it was, I don't know, plastic cups. Like they all became vehicles for something else. But when they were done playing with it, they just left it where it was. And that was a different kind of worldview. It wasn't because they were trying to be bad to the environment. It's just that that became a natural part of the environment that they were used to seeing. And there was no shame, and there was no, you know, like desire to pick up trash, because it wasn't in their mind. It wasn't trash. It was simply toys and things that were always around. And that's what they looked at it. So for us to recognize that we couldn't sit in judgment of the children that saw their normal one way, or the beautiful families of fishermen that were making a beautiful living, yet littering the shore with the guts of all these fish and fish blood everywhere, or the conservationists, not one particular worldview is quote unquote correct. They're all correct in their own perspective. And in order to come together, we need to learn to develop language and be able to connect without judgment and be able to apply compassion to different ways of thinking and what that means inside of each one of us. And my son and I talked about this a lot on our travels, is expanding our worldview to make space for other perspectives and points of views to live side by side. And that was one of the most powerful ways that we recognize that travel is such an incredible way to educate ourselves, because not only we're not just talking about like academics, we're talking about, and I hate this term, people call them soft skills, but we're talking about human skills and really tapping into our own humanity in order to be a member of the world. Yeah. And I've got story after story after story, realizations, you know, from, you know, places that we went to in Asia, places that we went to in Africa, places that we were in Europe, like each one gave us a different something to look at, because not only do we carry our own worldviews through the lenses that make us who we are, the world itself has its own worldview, right? Who are we as humanity? And then why does it keep going smaller and smaller and smaller until we're focused on the smallest, most, you know, minute perspective of our individuality, which is so important. And our goal is we have to balance that. We have to balance the relationship between who we are and honor who somebody else is and figure out how to make that work.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to share because this is your son's privacy, but I'm interested to hear what he's up to in life, where he sees his life, what he wants to do with his life. Like, what happened after all those years of education through world schooling?
Yeah, amazing. So he is now 23 and we are both living in the same town here in central Mexico. It's actually, the town is considered the heart of Mexico. And we both love it. We both love this town. We don't live together anymore, but he was here last night. We had dinner. He comes up and does his laundry. We're like 25 minutes apart from each other. So we meet each other in town and have drinks or a meal all the time. So yeah, he is from a professional perspective. He is facilitating and teaching young children at a online self-directed learning hub. So he's doing that for work. Together we facilitate teen retreats through a company that we founded together and had established and worked at for the last 10 years. And he also works with me in my teen mentoring and teen coaching practice. And he co-teaches a course with me on mental health. And in fact, believe it or not, just about 2 hours ago, the course that we teach Mondays and Tuesdays, and today's topic was worldviews, which was really cool. And we were working with the younger kids today. And one of the ways that we help teens or young tweens and teens understand worldviews is by designing a character, by pulling apart all the lenses and defining that, and then putting them in a situation and asking how they would function just based on the criteria that we designed their worldview based on. It's kind of cool. It gives them a really great way of playing about that. So anyway, we work together still. We're still in partnership, but he's completely independent from me. Yeah.
Wow. How do you create such a strong partnership with your son?
Well,
I'm sure that there are moms listening to this. Sorry, I'm interrupting you there. I'm sure there are moms hearing this and saying, like, how do they not, you know, want to kill each other at some point? They've been traveling together, working together. I can hear them coming in telling me, like, I could never do that. It's great for her, but how could you possibly do that? So how do you create a partnership so strong with your son?
Well, when we started to travel, that was our goal. We were going to be in partnership. So part of like my political theory, my political stance is I look at the world through the lens of an anarchist, and I don't mean anarchy in a sense of chaos, but anarchist in the sense of nobody has authority over me, and I need to be accountable for my own actions, my own rules, my own values, and living a life that I want to live, because I'm not going to give that power to an authority, because it just doesn't make sense to me. That's just who I am. And so when my son and I set out to travel, I said to him, I don't want to be the boss. I want to have this adventure in partnership with you. Do you want to enter into partnership with me? And he said, yes. So we were very, very intentional. And that required a lot of communication, a lot of emotional intelligence, a lot of repair after, we had made mistakes. A lot of being accountable for our own triggers. And through all of this stuff, we did a lot of internal work. And that's part of who I am as an adult and as a mentor and as somebody who works with kids. Like this is part of the practice that I do. We were intentional about it, and we had conversation every single night to unpack the day and be accountable. Took a lot of work, but let me tell you, choosing to be in partnership and connection over coercion automatically creates a stronger bond. And that's in adult relationships, that's in a parent-child relationship too. So the connection is what keeps our relationship strong, and we continue to be in partnership because we're both living by our core values and principles, not external rules that don't make sense.
And bouncing off of that, I know that something that you speak about is creating a family culture. So can you tell us what is a family culture in your eyes, and how do you create one?
Well, being very intentional about the manner in which we interact was really how we created our family culture. We did a couple of things. We defined the manner in which we would solve problems. For us, we wanted to be in full consensus. So that means unpacking stuff as challenges come up. So we also wanted to, like I said, kind of manage or define the governance in our family. I wasn't the boss, and that alleviated pressure from me to know everything, which meant I could be vulnerable and I could be fallible, but I needed to be accountable for those miscomings. And together we had the balance of making decisions. So all of the money, we budgeted everything together. From an early age, he had all the codes for the bank. Partnership was really, really, I trusted him. It was based on trust. It was based on knowing that we could move through anything together. And it was based on the understanding that we needed to unpack everything together. So partnership and governance was a big part of it. We also decided to adapt several themes that helped us give us a scaffolding or a framework to move within. Because we knew what our core values were, it was really easy for us to make the agreement to one another to say yes to everything. And saying yes to everything that was in alignment with our core values gave us the sense that it was him and I side by side, having this adventure in the world instead of me and him facing each other trying to figure stuff out. We were walking side by side. And one of the scaffolding or frameworks was saying yes, which is also part of the reason 8 months into our travels, when he said, Mom, can we do this forever? I was kind of obligated to say yes, but I really wanted to. And so the yes to life part, because it was in alignment with the values that we were currently leading, it made it really easy. So part of creating a family culture is figuring out what those sort of idiosyncratic themes that you can live behind are. So that gives you a little bit to start off with family culture. It's governance, core values, how you're going to problem solve together. And then if you were going to do some themes, what would they be?
Awesome. I know that we could dive deeper into that, but I know that we don't have a lot of time. So before we finish off, I would love to ask you, Like I like to ask all my guests, because I like to learn from all different views of motherhood, what is one of your favorite things about motherhood?
Well, really establishing partnership with the other human being that was entrusted into my life and watching them thrive and become independent and really knowing that they are safe and secure in the world, that is what every parent should strive for. If you're parenting from a place of fear or parenting from a place of control, there's a better way. And that way is parenting within partnership and also establishing a connection that is based on accountability of self-inquiry.
Excellent. And what is one of the most challenging parts of motherhood?
Fear, overcoming your own programming, because we were all raised by parents. A lot of us carry generations of trauma and wounds. And if we don't become aware and accountable of our internal worlds, we can perpetuate the same patterns and repeat those. I am a survivor of childhood trauma, and I chose to end that pattern with me and became super, super accountable for my internal worlds, which then empowered my son to develop his own emotional intelligence, not only through example of the modeling that I was doing about my own internal worlds, but the act of the communication that we started to, the pattern that we, new pattern that we started to create. So, yeah.
Awesome. And last question, and then you'll tell us where we can find you. Last question. If you could give yourself one tip to you before you became a mother, what would you tell yourself?
Well, I would say be kind and gentle to yourself, Lainey, and every parent out there. A lot of us, most of us, almost every parent wants what's best for our child. And a lot of times that does come from unquestioned fear. Just be careful what fears you're adapting as your truth. You can really unpack and work through and reprogram some of these fears because they're about things that just simply aren't true. We want what's best, and sometimes that drives us down a path of really disconnecting from our true self because fear is so overwhelming. So figure out how you can really be accountable for your own fears, your own patterns of thinking. And probably the first place to look at that is to see where are the places where your child triggers you. Those are probably your unresolved wounds inside of you from your own childhood, which lead into fears and judgments.
I needed to hear that today, and I'm sure that there are many others that would be very, very powerful to hear today. So thank you so much. Where can we find you?
Oh, lots of places online. So I just wrote a book for parents of teens, and tweens. It's called Seen, Heard, and Understood, Parenting and Partnering. There's that word again, with teens for greater mental health. So it's basically encompasses everything that we were talking about. My passion is working with teens. You can find me at transformativementoringforteens.com and projectworldschool.com, or you can just Google my name, Lainey Liberty. The last letter of Liberty is an I, and you'll find me all over. I've done lots of talks. My son and I did a TEDx talk in 2015 or 16, somewhere around there. I've given so many interviews and talked about specific things, so you can find lots of information just by searching my name.
Awesome. We will have it all linked down here at the bottom so you can
Thank
find
you.
it there. Thank you so, so much, Lainey. Thank you.
My pleasure talking to you, and thank you for the invitation again.